This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. We're joined today by evaluation specialist and a brilliant leader, evaluation leader at RSM. And we're going to talk to Matt Wolf today about something that's become a new thing in the private equity world. And there's so many things driving it. And this is the concept of an investment in a private equity fund, and then the private equity fund ultimately building a special purpose vehicle or a continuation fund that's going to buy that investment from a fund that might have a duration on it. And there's all kinds of reasons for this. The continuation fund and the private equity fund may love the business. They may have to be out of their original fund. The founders, the company might love the sponsor. But at the same time, there's this need to move to out of the initial fund, but not totally go to a new sponsor. And then you've also got the private equity funds needing to put assets to work, money to work. It's doing a new fund around a specific purpose, specific company. It can be very appealing because there's that desire to put money to work. It also raises the amount of assets under management at play. And so the private equity fund's able to collect fees on that as well. There's so many different pieces to this. A lot of good motives, a lot of challenges. Matt, what are you seeing with this continuation fund concept, these new vehicles, and what are some of the valuation pitfalls that someone's got to think about when they're using a continuation fund to buy an existing investment from another one of their funds?
Yeah, it's a great question, Scott, and thanks for having me again. I think as we talk about essentially extending the hold period is just managing those valuation expectations, right? It's more of an issue, you know, kind of put on our venture capital hats almost, right? In that world, the fear is having a down round, right? You don't want to raise your Series C at a lower valuation than in your Series B. And that's not really as much of an issue in most corners of private equity, but I think it becomes a consideration with these continuation funds, right? So managing kind of that sort of targeted enterprise value, being mindful of the sort of signal versus the noise when it comes to valuation multiples, right? People ask me all the time, hey, what are you seeing for multiples in this subsector, this niche? And it's, you know, well, anywhere from 5 to 15 times EBITDA, right? There's a lot of noise in those numbers. And I think being mindful and kind of intentional. Well,
talk about those noise in those numbers. Because everybody hears broad multiples, but those multiples might really apply to a stable company with little customer concentration that's very non-fragile. It may also apply different multiple to a company that's growing like crazy. And so you have different, I mean, it is very specific to the company, isn't it? It's not just a general multiple. Yeah, the general multiple means this for this type of company, but nobody's really that kind of company generally. Nobody fits that clearly into a specific channel, do they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've seen such an evolution in specificity in business models as our economy has become so much more competitive that, you know, you talk about the example of, oh, well, it's not a plain Jane manufacturing company. This is different. Well, I don't even think there's such thing as a plain Jane manufacturing company really much anymore. Companies have to become so specialized and so unique that you can't apply a broad multiple, or it's difficult to apply a broad multiple anymore. The other factor there is consideration. Purchase consideration has become so complex, right? If you think about that multiple, you know, what goes into the numerator? If I pay you $20 million in cash for your company, plus I give you $20 million in rollover equity, plus I have a $50 million contingent payment if you hit your incredible growth forecast, you know, what do you put in that numerator? Do you put $40 million? Do you put $90 million? Do you put somewhere in between? Right?
But another question here. When somebody's doing a continuation fund, I mean, the best true valuation is you take it to the market, you do a true auction, you really figure out what the price is. I mean, that's really the best indicator of value is what other private equity funds will pay for it. And we all know that largely you get your best price when you do enough of an auction, enough players. I mean, by and large, not always, but you generally get your best and clearest price when you really take it to market. When people are doing these continuation funds, does it make your valuation work a ton more stressful because they're not really taking it to market? And you have to be very careful that the private equity fund doesn't want to manage the value. They don't want to manage you to value.
Yep, and that's where we get into this kind of signal versus noise and those valuation multiples. And so, you know, we hear from bankers or sponsors or our own research databases that, well, this company traded at 15 times EBITDA. So, you know, there's support for this outrageous multiple, but you have to look and say, okay, well, what went into that 15 times EBITDA? Is it a similar enough business to be applicable? How was the consideration structured? What are they calling EBITDA? And it absolutely does. Because you want it to be right? You want it to be credible and supportable. And so it really comes down to really understanding what's going into those multiples and how the businesses relate, because you don't have that direct indication of a market price.
And it's got to be supportable to or credible to four or five different constituencies. There's the original owners that may still own a piece that may or may not roll over, and they may want the highest price possible, most likely, even if they are rolling over, to make sure their value is the highest. It's got to be credible to the lender who's got to lend a certain multiple roll against that and make sure that they're not over-lending. It's got to be credible to the limited partners in the original business that have the right to reinvest in the new continuation vehicle, because they have to make sure. I mean, there's some potential concern. Look, we paid $100 million originally for this to be in this investment, and the management fees on that, the AUM fee on it was 2%. Now the assets under management on this are going to be $400 million, so the 2% of $400 million is a lot more than $100 million. And the LP's got to be credible, because they might have to roll over or reinvest here to still own their share of the business. So there's a lot of different parties. And then the original sponsors got their own motivations. They want to buy high enough for the existing fund to do well and have good reports, but they want to be low enough for the continuation vehicle to do well. I mean, you have different motives there as well. Everybody's got different motives.
Yeah, a lot more stakeholders than typical fund reporting, financial reporting requirements, which means a lot more scrutiny. So a lot more thought has to go in, and work has to go into kind of supporting that credible valuation. Absolutely.
I mean, just fascinating. And there must be, like, and you guys do a great job of staying independent and fighting that pressure. But there must be, I mean, I take it when a private equity fund comes to this, hardly ever do they come to this with no idea what they think the value should be. I mean, they've already got some sense from whether talking to bankers or others that they think the value should be in this range, $320 million to $340 million, whatever it is. And it must be challenging as a valuation firm to deal with that. They've got clarity of expectations, but you've got to really make sure you do an independent valuation that works for all these constituents and that you could stand behind. I mean, that's a challenging spot.
Yeah, and that's really the value add, right? And that's our communication. That's how we approach this, is to say, look, we understand that you have this idea of what the value is. And that can be, to a degree, useful information right there in the market. They understand this. But at the same time, we need to rely on credible information to produce a valuation that is defensible and provides value to all of the stakeholders and helps that sponsor manage risk, right? Reduce their risk of putting out a valuation that is not supportable and, you know, upsets certain stakholders.
100%. And once you, as a valuation firm, once you upset one of the stakeholders because they think it came in too low or too high, It is. If it's draft, no matter what you say, whatever you say, this is draft for discussion, whatever it is, it's very hard to get back the trust of where that stakeholder is. And it depends which stakeholders hired you, who you're working for, stuff like that. But either way, it's got to be a totally legitimate, unbiased valuation. But once it hits a different spot, that trust issue is very hard to find back, isn't it?
Yeah, which is why it has to start with the market data. Here's what's out and observable in the market. Here's why this is or is not applicable to this specific company. And a lot of it comes down to being transparent too, right? So being transparent, we've found, helps to build that trust, right? There's no, you know, there's very little kind of secret sauce in valuation. It's all about, you know, your approach, your diligence, and making sure that you can remain objective, and being transparent helps to communicate that.
100%. It's such a fascinating world. And I know that, like, you know, so many sellers try so hard to show, or sponsors sometimes show, this is the expected growth. This is where you expect growth. This is where you expect everything. And your job is to question all of that and make sure you can find it credible or not. And what a challenging role. And you guys do a RSM, again, just does a magnificent job of it in fighting through these issues. When a private equity sponsor could be on both sides of a transaction, they're a seller of it in one fund, they're a buyer of it in another fund, just raises another whole level of fascinating issues. And, you know, Matt, thank you for indulging me in this discussion. I find it fascinating. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.